If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM. Let's create.
High Five Casino. High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at highthenumber5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
This is Alec Baldwin. And you're listening to Here's the Thing from iHeartRadio. My guest today is famous for playing a witch and keeping us in stitches. Actor, comedian, and my dear friend, Caroline Ray. The Canadian-born performer came up as a stand-up comic in New York City, working the Bloomingdale's perfume counter by day and performing open mics at night. In the 90s, she moved to Los Angeles and soon after landed the television role that would make her famous, Aunt Hilda in Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Since then, she has taken her talent many places, performing stand-up on Comedy Central, HBO, and Showtime, helming the Caroline Ray Show, hosting The Biggest Loser, voicing the Disney Channel's Phineas and Ferb, and appearing as a panelist on game shows like Hollywood Squares and with me on Match Game. Yet Ray always comes back to her first love. She recently got back on the road performing stand-up across the country. But don't let the perky smile and buoyant personality fool you. Her humor can be bawdy.
It's hard to pick a name. Like, I wanted to name her Emmy because I've always wanted an Emmy. And, But when we were trying to pick her middle name, it was like everybody was giving a suggestion. So someone said, what about Lily? And I'm like, no, that's like a pole dancer. Absolutely not. And then someone said, what about Marie? And I'm like, my mother's like, that's so Catholic. I'm like, oh. And so my daughter's father's mother said, well, what about Gina? And everyone's like, that's so pretty. And I'm like, hello, Ava Gina is not going to be my daughter's name. No.
Caroline Ray had her daughter Ava in 2008 and took 10 years off of her career to focus on raising her. I wanted to know what that time of her life was like.
I did stand up, but I would do it. I would do occasional corporates and I would, but I would.
So you cut way back.
I would maybe go on the road two or three times a year.
Oh my God.
But I would do stand up locally. But no, I really thought I was like lucky enough to have a baby as old as I was. And I was not, there was nothing at the time that was going to be more interesting than she was at a comedy club. And I felt like I'd already been there. And then when she was about 2.5, I was like, I have to go on stage right now. And then
yes.
I did a special, so I worked on that. But I would say in the last year, I've done more stand-up than I have in 15 years. I'm like, every night I'm at the Comedy Store or the Improv doing something. I don't know, after COVID, I thought I'd never do it again. And then I got COVID, and I was like, okay, it's not as bad. And then I ran to a stage as quickly as possible. But it's weird. It doesn't matter what I do. That is where I'm happiest on stage.
Yeah.
What is your happiest? Like, of all the things you do? Being in a movie, probably, right?
No, not at all? Probably.
A play.
A play or this. I like doing this. I mean, we do this and we're not getting rich doing this podcast.
But you were brilliantly funny as a game show host, too.
You take off when you just said that about nothing's as interesting in a comedy club as this. I said that to watch
the journey of human development day by day up close, the good and the bad, because my kids are either uproariously funny or I want to throw them off the balcony. There's just nothing I found that could replace that. Did you find that when you, after that period, when did you decide you were going to go back into it hard charging and full time?
Well, at some point I thought I call it a MoMA. It's like a mom coma where you're just in it. You know what I mean? That's what you're doing. You're being a mom or you're being a dad and you're being it so fully. And every minute of that is the greatest. Like, I feel like my life went from I had a great life. And the minute Ava was born, it went to Technicolor.
Right.
It was winning the lottery for me. And it took so long. And it came, my dad died. My parents got diagnosed with cancer 1 week apart. And my dad died. And the next month I got pregnant naturally at 43. So I feel it was like a spiritual miracle. I was told I had a 1% chance of getting pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe in all of that. So it was 1%. But I was just going to say that at some point I thought, I have to be an interesting person for my child. And I have in no way sacrificed anything because she's given me everything in raising her and being with her. But I want her to have a passion in her life that she loves and a purpose.
How old is she now?
She's 14. And I feel like it's my purpose to be a comedian. And now, after having done it for so long, I'm not trying to get a special. I'm not trying to get a TV show. I'm not doing it for anything other than the fact that if I go in a room and at the end of that hour, I've elevated anybody in any way to be in a happier place, I feel like my job's done. And I feel like that's what we need to be doing. And I feel like concentrating on what we have in common as people again, like to sort of reunite us. And I also think my mom didn't have a voice at this age. I'm never going to give up mine. And there are women my age that exist, that are thriving, that need to see themselves being spoken about.
How is it different now than when you started in terms of being on stage?
Well, you could say anything on stage in 1989. And now, you have to be socially respectful. And it's just, it's very different. But also, stand-up's how I process my life. The audience is sort of therapy, and we figure out what's going on. And I always say this, but the only reason I was successful is I thought I was so unique. It's because I'm not in any way unique. I'm exactly like everybody else. I'm exactly like everyone else. But when I first started, I wanted to talk about sex, and I wanted to talk about everything that women are traditionally not supposed to talk about.
Right.
That's what I wanted to talk about. I remember being called the Liz Phair of comedy, and I thought, wow, that's like the biggest compliment.
You know how to play it clean.
Right.
And I'm assuming because you've done a lot of network stuff, you have to play it clean. Like Tina Fey taught me that. She said, this is harder with standards because we have to find another way to say it.
Right.
We can't be dropping the F-bomb and everything all the time.
I don't know what your most famous thing is, but like if I say your name to a man, they immediately say Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me, it was Sabrina,
right,
which is what you're most known for, which I will be forever grateful for. But all of a sudden, I had 8-year-olds in the audience. And I remember saying to them, do you know what boundaries are? And they said, yes. And I go, because your parents don't. And then I thought, okay, now I have to change my act because I'm never going to teach a child something its parents, their parents haven't taught them.
You're not their parents.
No. So then I sort of adjusted my act. And I would say, I don't know, it's probably more for everybody now. I just like writing a joke about something. Like I wrote a joke that if you date someone in the military, I didn't know this, but after sex, the protocol is you're supposed to say thank you for your service. I said, and I dated, he was an Army Ranger, so I think he had intimacy issues because after sex, I went to the bathroom and he parachuted out of the window. So, like, to me, that's processing something that actually happened. I'm not going to go into nitty-gritty detail anymore, probably. Maybe if I was in a group full of just women, because women speak in the most intricate, disgusting way about sex that you have no idea.
Right.
You're more like, oh, her, whatever, but we're like, we could do a court sketch of any penis we've ever been told about.
Yeah. But when you're out there now, like when you started, describe your first stand-up comedy gig. This was in Canada before you came?
I never did it in Canada because, you can't be a prof in your own town. I moved to New York. Scott Blakeman taught a class at the New School called stand-up comedy. And then the first time I went on stage was at the comic strip. And I had all these Australian friends who were completely broke, who are now like giant titans of business who, sold their companies for hundreds of millions of dollars. And I'm like, really? Because I paid for every dinner in the 90s. And as I walked on stage, my friend John Wiley said, you're really bad. And I'm like, I'm not even at the mic yet.
Right.
It's like in Ireland, they heckle you on the way like, you're fat. I'm like, I'm not at the mic yet. You can't pre-heckle me. And then I just remember standing there and doing it. And I thought, I have no idea where I am or what I'm doing. Like I said, and then I just said, I can't imagine how many times you're at your job and you get up and look around and go, I have no idea what I'm doing here or where I am. Oh, I'm a dentist. Whatever it is, I just, and then that was it. And then I went on stage probably 500 times a year for the next few years, going to every open mic possible. My sister could lip sync my act from the back of the room. She was so supportive.
It's funny, the performance gene. Did you know you were a performer back then when you were in Canada?
Performing? I mean, I was always in plays, and I was always sort of, I think that's the thing about a stand-up. Before they get on a stage, they're doing, those poor people that they grew up with have heard their material all the time. There's something that is triggered in me if there's, you know, more than a certain amount of people, you know, it wakes up in me that, and if it's 1,000 strangers, then it really wakes up in me. It's a weird thing. It is that complete love of performing.
Billy Joel came on this show in one of our earliest shows.
He did?
Billy Joel comes on the show and he says that, you know, one of the conditions of his success is everywhere he goes, people are like, Billy, do you mind? It's Christmas. Just a couple of tunes. We just had it tuned. The piano's right over here. Just a couple of songs, please. Like everywhere he goes, if there's a piano in the room, everybody's like, Billy, does everybody ask you to do the wedding toast? Do they ask you to do the, you know, are you always asked to get up and be funny?
Yes, which is like literally the only thing that will make me not funny.
So the first place you go from Canada when you come to the U.S. is where?
New York City.
You go to New York.
I move.
Why?
I can't remember if it was 85 or 87. I was flying back from Tucson, where my dad lived, sitting next to this very gorgeous model who was talking to me about his famous brother, who was on Knott's Landing.
Oh, no. You're with Billy.
I was with Billy.
Yeah, with Billy.
And then we shared a cab home. I was on the Upper East Side. He was on the Upper East Side. And I was so mesmerized by him, how handsome he was, I left all of my luggage in the cab.
Yeah. So when you come to New York, is it hard back
then? It's terribly hard. It's awful.
Was it hard to break in?
Yes. I felt like New York was a giant balloon and I had a cotton ball. And I remember my friend Norm Macdonald was on Letterman, and he brought me with him. And I remember sitting backstage.
The old Letterman.
Yeah, the early 90s. And I remember sitting backstage, and Christy Turlington was the other guest. And there were these giant cookies with jam in them. How about the fact that that's what I remember from Letterman?
Yeah.
Right. The treats in the green room.
Yeah.
And then I remember just thinking, I just want to be a part of whatever this is. I need to. And it was like I was invisible. Nobody would even, you know, like, talk to me, basically. And I was just there for Norm, sitting in the back, and then supporting him. And Melissa Etheridge was the other guest, too. And I was like, I just want to be, this is all I want. And I loved Letterman so much. That was very hard. It was very hard. And then I went on the road and did colleges. And I would just cry, and I would call my sisters who were so supportive. It was just really hard, because the thing about comedy that's so hard is that you're so seemingly connected to people, and then you are alone. You know, and then you're alone in your room. You were with so many people. And I fully understand now, like, to me, the understanding of an extrovert and an introvert. My friend Peter Johnston is like an expert in this. And he said, an extrovert is someone who really finds energy from other people. That's their life source. Mm-hmm. And an introvert is ultimately drained by being around too many people. Mm-hmm. And I am truly an extrovert. I can't even get something done if I'm alone. But if someone's in the other room, I can function really well.
Wow.
But if I'm alone, I'm like, no.
But you have such a command on stage. Like, there are people who come up and, you know, you're not Stephen Wright.
Right.
Well, like, I couldn't even find you inside the wallpaper. Like, it all blends together in terms of his personality. But he's very funny. He's incredibly funny. But you are an entertainer of the old school, where you're up there and right away. But first of all, and I told them this before you came here, I go, this woman is, everybody loves you. Everybody loves you. You have an energy. You walk on, and you don't even open your mouth, and you're halfway home. People just adore you. There's a warmth. There's a love. There's a graciousness. They know they're going to see a good show. You have a persona before you even start telling jokes. Did you have to find that? A warmth.
I sound so sappy, but I am genuinely so happy to be there, and especially after COVID, I'm so grateful to be there.
Right.
And that the fact that I've been doing this long and an audience is still coming to see me, I am so happy to see them, you know?
But you're most comfortable when you're on stage.
Probably.
You really love it.
Yeah, I feel like I always think my stand-up is a dinner party. I know what I'm going to make. You're my guests. I don't know what's going to happen. But the thing about stand-up that amazes me is it's only going to happen in that moment in time. Even if we film it, it's never going to be what it feels like live. So I think it's just an exchange of energy.
Now, you were in New York, went out to L.A., kept the apartment in New York, finally gave up the apartment in New York, and you're living in L.A. What's the difference for you? Because I have my theory about that.
What's the difference for me?
Well, the difference for me is that there's so many more actors out there than there are in New York. Like, every time I see a picture of you on your Instagram, you're like, you know, hey, it's me and so-and-so. You're like at this event or this party. And it's very social in the business. There's a lot of opportunities
right.
at benefits
it's
or whatever.
It's a giant sure. office. That's what Los Angeles is.
Bingo.
It's a giant office. But I'm really there more as, like, I don't need to live there anymore. I mean, it's just that my daughter's in school there now and she's connected to that. And even though I lived in New York for 30 years, I come back and it's the boyfriend who I loved more than anything, but I know why we broke up.
Right.
Like, I don't want to live here anymore. It's too many people.
Yeah.
I feel claustrophobic. And then when I'm out there, I'm like, stop talking about hiking. I don't care.
Yeah.
It's just, it's such, like, I just can't believe you're talking about hiking and how the hike was. It was just walking up a hill with rocks. Stop talking about it.
Yeah.
It's just torture.
But I think about that because most of my friends who were living here moved there in the 90s. They're all out there. They're all there. I mean, New York is where you come and live because you either don't care or you've made your name known well enough where they'll come find you if they want you. But for me, I see on your Instagram, and I'm not saying in a judgmental way, I'm saying you remind me about how out there you could go out every night to an event, a screening, an opening.
I hate doing that. I only have to do that
really?
For my social stuff. I just, you know, I could care less about going to those things. I really could. I'd much rather sit and have a small dinner party with somebody that I
Six
find
people.
Super interesting.
How did your work change once you had a child?
I mean, who you are before you have a child and who you are afterwards is completely different.
My sons are just, I don't know what to do in terms of they have all this energy. They don't go to sleep. They collapse.
I don't know how, I mean, if I'd had a boy, I would have had a nervous breakdown. I always think of you because Ava couldn't say certain letters when she was like a baby. She couldn't say L. You know how they go through phases where they're like, and I remember she would call water wadu and an orange ornange. And I was like, don't ever correct her because it's so adorable.
Yeah.
But the little boy, Killian, that lived across the hall, who was like, you know, they got married at age 3. He was obsessed with Thomas the Tank, your show.
My magnum opus.
Yes, your magnum opus. And he couldn't say R's. So he would always say, do you want to play with pussy instead of Percy?
Right.
And she had a big pink clock and she was like, do you want to play with my big pink cock? And I was like, this is the most horrifying soundtrack. I find, okay, I'm not the queen of boundaries anyway. I think Ava was 7 when she came home and said, we learned a new word today. I don't know what it means. And I go, well, how do you spell it? N-O. I'm like, yes, you've never heard it at this house.
Right.
So I think, one, being a single parent, I overcompensate because, you know, she's with me most of the time. I mean, she has a lovely father, but she's with me most of the time. I've always said to her, I go, if we do all the yeses, there are far fewer no's. Like, if you do everything you're supposed to do, I will say no probably much less than the average parent.
How are you with your daughter about media?
We were great until we went to Australia and I did the Melbourne Comedy Festival. And then I was like, she's going to get something electronic to, you know, so that she can be distracted. I regret it terribly. I really do.
Why?
Because I think that we're all so addicted to it, you know. I mean, I lost my iPhone recently, and they were 3 of the happiest days of my life.
Right.
You know, it's nice to be disconnected. In the summer, no electronics until 6. And we're all together, like my sisters and all the – we are all together as a family. So I like that.
Now, you do Sabrina.
Yes.
And I'm going to talk about that in a little detail about what that experience was like. Because that's a classic TV show, you know what I mean? But
it's all I ever wanted to do was be on a sitcom. That's all.
I mean, I have this thought that many people have, which is that, you know, these things are now on forever, you know?
I know.
If you're one of the stars of Friends or Seinfeld, it's like, that's going to just follow you around forever.
I mean, Sabrina's been on television every day somewhere since 2000.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And what was that experience like for you? Did you love it from the beginning?
It's so funny. I had this horrible, horrible boyfriend, and we went to Hawaii. This is pre-cell phones or whatever. It's the old, like, have your pictures developed. And I said it, and we broke up before the pictures were developed. And I was, like, so devastated by this, and I was sitting in the Upper West Side, and I got this phone call from Nell Scovell, who created Sabrina, and she said, are you sure you won't reconsider the part? And I'm like, Nell, I have no idea what you're talking about. My managers had never forwarded it to me weeks
before. That's illegal,
by the way. Well, They'd never forwarded it to me. They'd passed on it. I knew nothing about it. And she said, will you please, you know, we're casting this week. I'm going to send you the script. And it was so long ago that she sent it, and it was printed on, like, it looked like it came on a scroll from, like, ye old scripty.
Yeah,
exactly. So I went across the street, all the curled papers. I read the script immediately. I'm like, oh, my God, I absolutely want to do this. I want to be Zelda, which was not who I was. And she says, we're really thinking of you as Hilda. And I said, well, tell me about the character. And she said, she traps a man in her ring for not loving her. And I literally said, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah.
I'll do the part.
Yeah.
Because I had just had my heart broken. Yeah. I was like, I want this guy trapped in a ring. That's literally what I said. And then I flew out. And, you know, I did the first test. And then I went to producers. And then they sent me to the network. And I had just done a pilot that for some reason, it just...
For that network?
No, for ABC. I'd done a pilot that didn't get picked up. It was called Daisy's Mom, about being a single mother to a girl. And I was like, everything in my life, it always came true in some element, something I was playing.
Right.
It was weird. And then I went to network and I was like, you know what? This show is going to be on the air forever. I don't want to do this. I don't think I can do this. So I left my network test. And they were so
mad. For
Sabrina? Yeah, I left it. I'm like, I'm not signing.
That's
this.
The quickest way. That's the quickest way to get hired, by the way.
It's exactly.
I don't want
what
your
happened.
Show. Go to hell.
I just had this panic, and I don't know what I was thinking. And I flew home, and then they immediately called me and said, "You don't have to test. You can have the part. You know, can you let us know? And then you could just have to fly out and do like a chemistry test with whoever's going to play your sister. But please come." And I was such an idiot. I was like, no. I didn't want to. And then I remember my mother called me and said, good Lord, that's not like they've asked you to be a bricklayer. Don't be such an idiot.
You're disappointing me.
Exactly. I disappointed her. So then I took the job. And then, of course, I went to the psychic. And he said, the show that you're starting in September will be on the air for 7 years, which it was. I stayed on it for six, but it was there for seven. It was the greatest thing that's probably ever happened to me in many ways because... I know this is really hokey, but it was like, what a gift to be able to entertain kids, right? And like in an adult show that was
completely a loyal audience,
powered by women, about powerful women. The only objective my character ever had was she was 600 years old and she had a playmate. And the only thing I ever thought in every scene is you love this kid. You just love her.
Right.
And you have someone to like play with and be silly with.
Caroline Ray. If you enjoy conversations with hilarious women, check out my episode with Paula Pell.
I used to write a sketch called 6 Degrees Celsius, and it was like a boy group. And Will Ferrell was their manager. He had tinted glasses, of course. You know, it was Jimmy Fallon and Chris Kattan and Chris Parnell, and they were a boy group. And then we'd have the host in it. Well, that week, NSYNC was there. We asked NSYNC to be another boy group in this competition on the show, playing a fake boy group. And so I wrote a song called Hold the Pickle, and they were like McDonald's employees. And so NSYNC came out with like McDonald's outfits on and sang Hold the Pickle. And they were so crazy talented. Like they got there and looked at it for 10 minutes and had full harmonies and full choreography. I mean, they threw that shit together. I was just amazed.
To hear more of my conversation with Paula Pell, go to heresthething.org. After the break, Caroline Ray shares the gifts that working on Sabrina the Teenage Witch has brought into her life.
The following is a High Five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Woo!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your High Five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those, too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.
I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. When Caroline Ray was hired on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, she had already done years of stand-up. I wanted to know if her comedic background brought about any improvisation on set.
That was not a big improvised show. They were very nice about, but I had done a lot of pilots, and I had done a series that had lasted 6 episodes and was canceled with a 19 share. So now I feel like I'm actually writing a pilot because I want to be able to write my voice, which I, you know, it's fun. I like acting. I like playing a character.
Right.
But I think I want to do that, too.
For camera.
Yeah. For camera. Yeah. You're going to be on it. I haven't told you yet, but I'll tell you.
I'll play Carlton the doormat.
Yeah.
Now, but are you really working on this right now?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh.
Did I answer the question about Sabrina? I don't know if I did.
It follows you everywhere.
Sabrina,
yes.
You everywhere. Yeah. I've been called a witch in every country.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But you know what? I've also been able to walk into the Walter Reed and see soldiers. I've been able to go into children's hospitals. I've been able to be sort of, you know, it's in its fourth generation of like little mm-hmm. girls to come up and hug me. You know, it's nice to be on something that was sort of a good, like, you can watch that show. And I've watched so much children's television now because of my daughter. I didn't watch an episode of Sabrina until Ava was 7.
Wow.
And then we watched an episode every night. But I remember, and I'm sure you've had this experience, I remember when I had done a Sesame Street video and Ava saw me on television, and then she asked me one day, she goes, "Mummy, are you the same mummy as you are as that person on television? Is that person on television also my mummy?" I was like, it's a very confusing way to put that.
Yeah.
But yeah, all forms of me and any image of me is still your mummy.
Talk to me about astrology. Why did you become interested in astrology?
I don't know. I think it's because I grew up with a very open-minded family who we had a ghost in our house and it wasn't scary. It was just sort of accepted. And we were big believers in the unseen. And I think it's just anything that's like a further understanding of it's just like breaking down a character in a play, right? Like who they are. You're an Aries. You're full Aries. You are such Aries energy.
You know what the condition of the Aries is, don't you?
Right.
How lonely it is being right all the time.
Really? Because that's pretty Capricorn.
That's my wife. That's my wife.
I should have brought you my cards, did I not? I've sent them to you. The original one for Aries I had to put for Aquarius, which was, "Dear Aries, your compliment hurt my feelings." If you're talking to another Aries, you don't get hurt feelings because you know exactly what you're saying. But I'm
life
sure.
Life is short.
Yeah, we've hurt a lot of people's feelings unintentionally.
Let's get to the point.
Yeah, what's the point? Fast forward, blah, blah, blah. What are you trying to say?
I will say to my sister, and I'll say to numerous people in my family has this. And today's St. Patrick's Day, they've got this Irish disease where I'll talk to them and I'll go, I heard that Jerry's daughter was in a car accident. They'll go, "Well, you know, Jerry, now remember that time with Jerry?" And we got to loop around,
oh, yeah,
like 6 spins around the track before we finally get to the point. And I will just talk to my family and I'll go, wait, what happened to Jerry's daughter? That's how this began. And they never get to the point.
I have a really funny memory with you too, before we were friends. So it was 1996 and I was sitting happily in first class, in my first class seat. I fell asleep, and I thought we had arrived in L.A., and they're like, "We're sorry for this 2-hour delay, but this plane is broken. You know, we'll get you on another plane soon." And we ended up I had to take a flight that I had to fly coach. That day, I'd gone to look at an apartment with my sister in New York, and the girl who answered the door said, "You know, you're in television. That's weird. This is Ted Danson's old apartment." And I go, "That's weird." And she goes, "And I was the original Marilyn on the Munsters."
No.
Yeah, this woman.
Blonde. She was Marilyn.
Yeah. She was. So that happened. And then I go to the airport and I'm sitting next to Georgia Engel from Mary Tyler Moore.
Yes.
And I'm sitting next to her. And that was like another throwback. Right. And then I finally get on the plane and I walk by, and in my seat from the previous flight is now a very heavily bearded Alec Baldwin.
Oh, wow.
In my exact seat, who I did not know. And I was like, oh, it's so annoying that you're in my seat and I'm not. Not that it was you, just that I was like in 37H. And then when we land, Erin Murphy comes up to me and says, hi, we're kind of related. And I said, how so? And she said, I was Tabitha on Bewitched. This is all on the same day. And then she said, and this is my friend. He was Ernie on My Three Sons. I'm like, right. When did this plane leave? This is like the longest delay.
Right behind her was Greg Evigan from BJ and the Bear. I mean, that was the celebrity, that was the TV celebrity flight. Yeah.
I just watched a movie with Greg Evigan's daughter in it.
No.
Yeah, she's beautiful. She looks exactly like Greg Evigan.
Yeah, very handsome leading man. Gregory Harrison, who had a great career on TV, he was the one that said the thing that really kind of changed my acting career in a way. He said, I walked into the audition and I stopped pretending like I was doing them a favor. He said, you called me here. I'm here for a reason. I'm not like, oh, God, thank you so much. And like being so needy.
Right.
He said, you want something I have. Now, I want something you have, which is the power to cast people in a show, but I got something you want as well. And once I stopped asking, like they were doing me a favor, and that I had something of value as well, and I walked in and I was like a grown man going, what do you want me to play what? What do you want me to do?
Right.
And that imbued him with a kind of a confidence.
I always tell these young comics, I'm like, just remember, that manager and that agent work for you.
Right.
You don't have to please them. You're not like afraid of they are making money off your talent. You were very kindly said that I had a command on stage. And I read a review that Malcolm Gladwell had written about a book. And he said she wrote in a manner in which she was saying, don't you dare take your eyes off this page. And I remember reading that, and it gave me, you know, like, even though I've done this for so long, you're always learning something new. And I have this thing in my head now where I'm like, don't you dare take your eyes off me. Don't you dare. I have something to share with you. And it's really important that I get this message across. And I do think that now when I'm on stage.
Comedian and actor Caroline Ray. If you're enjoying this conversation, tell a friend. And be sure to follow Here's the Thing on the iHeartRadio app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. When we come back, Caroline shares the one time she completely bombed on stage.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Woo!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your high-five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. After 3 decades in movies and television, Caroline Ray is back performing stand-up in front of live audiences across the country. I wanted to know why the Comedy Club stage remains such a magnetic draw for her.
I think one of the things that, to me, is still so exciting about comedy is, like, I remember when I first moved to New York, I thought, I don't know where my gift is from. I don't know what this is. It's not tangible. It's not like I memorized actuarial tables and I can go be an accountant. I don't know where this is. It's something that comes from a place that I don't, you know, I can't see it. And then the longer I've done it, the more is like you are going to trust that your gift is there and you're sort of channeling it, like wherever it's coming from.
I think it's funny that your mother was an obstetrician, your father was a gynecologist. That's funny.
It is funny.
The magazines that came to your house, the professional periodicals that came to your house were probably just unsettling.
My father had a pen. I had a pen in the second grade that was for the pill, and it was like a little pill that went up and down. I had no idea. We had all those things. We had like gynelotrimin notepads. No idea what they were. The most hilarious is that because my dad was also medical director at Planned Parenthood, and my slutty friends in college would call up and say, can you ask your father if you can get herpes from giving a blowjob, but don't say it's for me, say it's for you. And I'm like, I can't say it's for me. Right. I mean, the seventh time I asked, my father's like, good God, what are you doing at that school?
Right, exactly. Now, when did you first sense that things had changed and this cancel culture thing was coming and people started to change their acts and the contents of their record? Did you become aware of that at a certain point?
I think when Louis sort of got canceled overnight.
Right.
And it was very conflicting because he's such an old friend of mine.
Right.
And
but without getting into details, when you see someone
being canceled,
Well, but why they're canceled? I mean, there's people who get canceled and I don't get it.
Yeah.
Now, Louis, when you understand what happened, you ask yourself, well, does he deserve to be canceled? You know what I mean? When you do that.
Well, it was very wrong what he did. I don't know. People make mistakes all the time. I don't think their lives should be judged on one event that they've made a terrible choice in. I don't.
But when that happened, that's when you saw like a turning point.
Yeah. And then I thought, and then I was very conscious of, you know, you do have to be respectful of where society is going. You have to be able to honor what people think and say without, you know, losing your own individual take on things.
What's the worst experience you ever had on stage?
I'll tell you right now. It was when I had to perform at a wedding. I was dressed as a bridesmaid, and they weren't expecting me. At their request. And yeah, it was the worst experience. I all of the saliva left my body, and it was just me going, horrible. And then when the woman paid me, I thought she was giving me a paper cut with the check.
Right.
It was like the first $500 I'd ever made. And I was just, oh, nobody's bombing at a wedding where they're not expecting you. And they just, I'm having a flashback. Horrible, horrible, horrible.
What are among your favorite cities to perform in? What's a city where you just almost
Denver. And I'm on my way there because I'm going to film a special there in May.
What's the special? Oh, you can't say?
I can't say. What do you think of this as a title? I'm trying not to hate men. You think that's just going to make every man hate you even more? I seriously don't understand men, and I'd like to.
They won't hate you, but they're going to go click. We used to say, turn the dial. I think men listen to these comics, and they'd be like, you know, what would the world be like if there were no men? We don't need men.
I'm not talking about that.
Right.
You've always been hypersensitive about being a man. I've noticed that about you.
I am.
You're always like,
it's so hard.
I'm not going to take all your, I remember you're like, I'm not going to have somebody else's bad experience projected onto me. And like, oh, yes, you are, because you're a very handsome movie star.
Well, I think that for men, they're always like, why do you...
Do you understand women?
Do I understand women?
Yeah.
I think I do in terms of...
You're very loving and kind with your wife.
Well, if I'm not, there's hell to pay. My kids will look at me and go, don't you talk to mommy that way.
I love that.
I'm like, when did my kids become my wife's legal team? They're all like her lawyer.
Guys, you know? That's mom.
But
what is the difference, you think, between the relationship between mother and father? Just innately, like from birth on, how do you think it differs?
What I consider a great line my dad gave me. He says, parenthood is a competition between two people where the father always wins the bronze medal.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the mother wins the gold and the silver. You come in third.
That's funny.
In a competition between two people, you're third. But
what
I want
to
say
in Canada, when we grew up in the Olympics, we thought bronze was the highest you could get.
Right, exactly. But let me just stop with this. I want to say I love you. Whenever I hear from you, whenever I talk to you, that energy of yours that's made everybody love you. Everybody loves you. Everybody loves you. What's your wrap-up?
That I love you and that you're a great man and that everything's going to be okay and you're a great dad and you make the world a better place.
My thanks to my dear friend, Caroline Ray. This episode was recorded at CDM Studios in New York City. We're produced by Kathleen Russo, Zach McNeese, and Maureen Hoban. Our engineer is Frank Imperial. Our social media manager is Danielle Gingrich. I'm Alec Baldwin. Here's the Thing is brought to you by iHeart Radio.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah.
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your high-five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.